morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Richard Love. I represent the District of Columbia and like to reserve 2 minutes, please. Initially, I would like to stress that the district court's ruling here stems from a misunderstanding of the district's position on the facts, and that there is plainly a genuine issue of dispute as to the safety of bearded fire department personnel wearing their respiratory masks, regardless of whether they are connected to a self-contained breathing apparatus or to a negative pressure air purifying respirator. The District of Columbia in this case never conceded that firefighters were adequately protected when their tight-fitting face pieces were attached to a self-contained breathing apparatus. Indeed, in its opposition to the motion for summary judgment, which is the focus of this appeal.
Well, what did counsel mean then when he said that DC wasn't worried about the safety of these self-contained breathing apparatuses?
Well,
instead he said the department was concerned with a situation where you have to go into a contaminated area for an extended period of time in which the firefighter would require respiratory protection other than an SCPA.
Yes.
So,
first of all, that was in relationship to a preliminary injunction issue, a modification of an existing preliminary injunction, and concerned the department's request that I believe it was three, it may have been more, of the plaintiffs be moved to an administrative duty in light of the expansive use or the intended expansive use of negative pressure masks subsequent to the 9/11 incident. And counsel indicated in that context that the concern was with this more of this mass casualty incident. But counsel also indicated that he was new to the case, he was just learning these issues, and it was not a concession that...
Well, the district court conceded that you didn't use the word concession, but he certainly saw it as a statement that this was not the issue. And you never corrected it.
Well, I believe we did correct it.
Not until quite a bit later, after discovery, and right?
No, I don't. When did you correct the case? If I could point the court to a couple of different things.
Sure. Go ahead.
First of all, at the August 1, 2005 hearing, there was an issue as to safety brought up by Chief Flint. Chief Flint testified that one of the safety concerns behind the prohibition of having facial hair present where the mask seals to the face is that a leak will cause the self-contained breathing apparatus, the air canister, to deplete its air volume more quickly. And he testified, and I quote, "The problem with that is that it results in a breathed service life. One of the reasons for the OSHA standard and the National Fire Protection Association standard mandating clean-shaven faces that we want to maintain as much of a service life for this breathing apparatus as possible. Here again, we work in teams of two. If one member of the team runs out..."
Can we go back? Can I take you back to Captain Flint for a minute?
Yes.
Okay. He says that the leaks reduce the service life of the air canister.
Yes, sir.
And the one reason for mandating clean-shaven faces is to avoid this problem. He isn't saying anything there about safety, contaminated air problems. He's saying...
That's correct, Your
Honor.
He's
saying that you would get leakage, you would get canister air.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, that's very different from...
Well, I'm giving you a number of different evidentiary pieces of evidence.
Well, but the pieces of... For you to create a genuine issue, have created a genuine issue of material fact, you have to have evidence in the record from which... the judge can conclude that there is evidence contesting the allegation that these do not create a safety problem. And I was simply asking you why, in view of Flint's statement that what he's worried about is canister air, why that's responsive to the plaintiff's allegation that the self-contained breathing apparatuses are safe from a contaminated air problem.
Well,
you see my problem?
Yes,
see
I do. And I agree with you. That doesn't run to the issue of drawing outside contaminated air into the mask.
So what else do you have?
All right. Well, when clearly it was disputed in the opposition to the plaintiff's
motion. When what?
In the opposition to the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment. They squarely indicated in its statement of material facts, which they contended there was no dispute about, that it was safe, it was not dangerous, is their words, for a firefighter to work in a hazardous environment using a SCUBA, self-contained breathing right. apparatus. And the defendants indicated that they disputed that statement.
That's in the opposition to the motion for summary judgment, right?
Yes.
Okay. And but it cites, let's talk about that one, okay? Mm-hmm. It cites McKay's third declaration for that yes. proposition, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So when you look at McKay's declaration, again, he's talking about the increased risk of exposure that comes from contaminant air generally. He's not talking about self-contained breathing apparatuses at all.
No, he is.
It's a general.
He is clearly talking about self-contained.
About self-contained.
Yes, because.
Really?
Yes, he is. Let me, if
you
I could explain.
Pull it out and show us that.
Yes.
Okay. What do you think he's talking about? Yeah. So I'm clear.
This is in paragraph 22 of his declaration. He's talking about. He's specifically rebutting the contention that it's safe for firefighters to work in a hazardous environment using a SCUBA, because he contests the basic foundation of plaintiff's premise that the air canister works on a continuous flow of air into the mask. It does not. It operates on a pressure demand respirator. What that means is when you inhale, air is supplied into the mask. The problem with that is that in moderate heavy to heavy exertion, which occurs all the time on a firefighting scene, you can overbreathe the air that's being supplied and pull in outside air with any contaminants that are in the outside air into the mask. That's the reverse flow that can occur when you are operating, even when attached with a self-contained breathing apparatus. So he disagreed, and he said, if an acceptable seal is not maintained, an inward flow of air will flow from the outside in. And he has repeatedly stated in all of his declarations that you cannot consistently achieve an appropriate fit with a tight-fitting face mask when there is facial hair present at the site where the mask seals to the face. Those two pieces of evidence clearly indicates that there is a safety problem even when the mask is configured or attached to a self-contained breathing apparatus. And that is also, I think, when, you know, so there are two issues here. One of them is the concern about outside contaminated air that can be drawn in. It could have an acute reaction if the air is toxic enough, and it also could have a prolonged reaction over time, exposing firefighters and other personnel to chronic conditions.
Now, counsel, can we go back to Flint's, I guess it's a deposition, I'm not sure, anyway, page 63 of the joint appendix, the passage just above the passage that you and Judge Tatel were talking of. And Flint says, so if there were any contaminants or actual leakage because of either facial structure or because of facial hair that had gotten caught, or maybe a piece of clothing, or maybe the strap was loose, that the air would rush in, would rush from the outside in.
Well, that's another.
That seems not to have, at least on a superficial reading, that doesn't seem to have to do with merely preserving the air in the canister.
That's correct. That precedes the concern about the depletion of service life, and I think is another example of testimony that is indicating that it is a problem that outside air can rush into the face mask. I mean, normally positive pressure works to defeat that, but there are situations where this mask can, even when attached to a self-contained breathing apparatus, be overbreathed, and that air from the outside can be drawn in during the pause between breaths and during exhalation. And there are a number of standards as well that I think.
Wait, can we just stick with McKay for a minute?
Yes, sir.
You said a few minutes ago that he testifies several times that contaminated air will can come through the SCBA, right?
I think that McKay's third declaration is what really addresses that issue.
Right, and you say that in your brief a couple times. You say that contaminated air would enter the SCBA in the event of an imperfect fit, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I looked at the sites you gave for that in McKay's testimony, and I didn't see him use the word contaminated air. He says, again, he's worried about excess canister air.
Well, if I could put that in perspective.
Well, but am I right that he doesn't use the word contaminated air?
Well, he says outside air.
But he doesn't use the word contaminated air, does he?
Well, if the outside air contained contaminants, it would be...
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Your brief says that, Dr. McKay says, that with an imperfect fit, there will be leaks, inward leaks of contaminated air. That's what your brief says, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I went to look at the declaration to find that, and I couldn't find any reference to contaminated air.
Well, I think the reasonable inference is if the air and most firefighting scenes are going to contain contaminants of one kind or another, and if outside air is able to rush into the mask.
Okay, but that's not what McKay is talking about. He's talking about canister air.
No, I don't agree.
You don't?
I think, I'm trying to explain. What he's giving two points are being made by Dr. McKay in paragraph 22. One is that the respiratory mask works on pressure demand. And the reason that's important is if it was a continuous flow of air, that canister would be rapidly depleted. And in order to preserve the air, in order to give firefighters the ability to spend the time they need to control the fire, it works on a pressure demand regulator. So that pressure demand regulator only supplies air when you breathe in. That helps to preserve the air in the canister, and that's the reason for the last sentence in that paragraph that I think Your Honor is referring to. But he also says right before that that if there is not an adequate seal, that an inward flow of air can come into the mask during exertion and during the pause between breaths. So I think that he is clearly making two points in that declaration. But the primary point is the outside air can be drawn in because it is only supplied. It's not a continuous flow, which was one of the premises in the undisputed statement of facts that plaintiffs identified. I see
well,
that.
Well, in terms of your, that's another interesting point. I agree. You, in your response to the statements to the paragraph 5 of their statement of material facts not in dispute, that's where they say that. That's where they say it's not dangerous, right?
Yes, sir.
And your response says that it isn't continuous. You're absolutely right about that, right? And it explains how the regulator works. But it doesn't in any place in there contest the statement that SCBAs are not dangerous.
Well, it does. It says if an acceptable seal is not maintained, an inward flow of air comes through the regulator during exhalation or during the pause between breaths.
And where does it respond to the argument that SCBAs are not dangerous?
Well, I think that's explaining why they are dangerous is because...
The question is whether, you know, you also have to read, don't we have to read these in the context of the counsel's statement to the court that SCBA safety wasn't the department's concern?
Well, I think, Your Honor, I think that the district had no obligation to dispute the district court's 2005 memorandum as to the conceded safety of scubas. It chose not to appeal that ruling, and the defendant's position evolved after that 2005 preliminary hearing, including a month and a half later, we submitted the first declaration of Dr. McKay, which clearly indicated that any respiratory face mask was unsafe when facial hair was present at the site where the mask seals to the face. It wasn't limited in any way.
Tell me exactly in McKay's declaration where he says that in the clearest way. Tell me
what he said. Well, I think in his first declaration, he said...
Other than talking about canister air, where he's talking about contaminated air. Just show me your best...
Well, I think in his first declaration, yeah. He indicates facial hair at the sealing surface of the respirator increases face piece leakage. This leakage is variable in nature and can change significantly from one donor to another and is particularly troubling. And he says wearing a respirator with facial hair could result in incapacitation if there is a leak, could jeopardize not only the health and safety of the wearer, but of the buddy and the rescue team.
Which paragraph is that? You're reading.
If the court will indulge me.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were literally reading it.
I am reading, but from my own notes and not from the declaration itself.
Was that the first declaration?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right, so we can go look at it.
It is in paragraph 11.
Yeah. Well, I have one question about that, though. Was that referred to in the opposition to the motion for summary judgment? Was that cited?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe the cite was to the third declaration, but it clearly is in the record.
But it wasn't cited to the court. It wasn't cited in the opposition.
Right. Not specifically, I do not believe.
Not at all.
That's correct.
Is the district raising an OSHA defense? You have one citation to OSHA in your blue brief and one in your gray brief, but they're fleeting citations.
Well, the references to various standards are not as that the district is bound by the OSHA regulations, but they're all evidence of a safety problem, including the 2007 National Fire Protection Association standard, which is the most recent standard, a standard by the association that certifies this equipment, that says members who have a beard or facial hair at any point where the face piece is designed to seal with the face shall not be permitted to use respiratory protection at emergency incidents or in hazardous or potentially hazardous atmospheres. I think this combination of evidence raises a genuine issue of dispute as to the safety of bearded personnel wearing these respiratory face masks. And I see I'm long out of my time. I thank you very much.
We'll give you a couple minutes on that.
Thank you.
Counsel for Appley.
May it please the court. The first point I would like to discuss is the district court's 2005 ruling that the department had taken the issue of SCBA safety out of the case. There were several factors that went into that ruling. First, it was not disputed that firefighters with the department had worn facial hair for many years without any injuries resulting. That was firefighters both with quarter-inch beards and from 1992 until 2001 at least, firefighters with longer beards, and there were no resulting injuries. Second, when the plaintiffs filed their complaint and moved for summary judgment or moved for a preliminary injunction.
Yeah, to back off a moment.
Yeah. Sorry.
The purpose of preventive rules is to prevent, and it isn't normally the case that preventive rules are adopted only after an actual injury has been shown. That's certainly not the way, for example, OSHA works.
Well, here
one can run hundreds of examples. We can begin with airline procedures on 9/11, nothing like this ever happened before. True enough.
Well, here I think it's important to take into consideration a couple of the other factors that the district court considered in finding that the issue was out of the case. First, in 2001, when the plaintiffs moved for a preliminary injunction, they introduced a declaration from Alexander Santora, former deputy chief and chief of safety of the New York City Fire Department.
There's undoubtedly evidence on your side. I don't think that's disputed.
Right. And then that evidence was echoed by the testimony of the department's safety officer at the August 1st, 2005 hearing, who was repeating what counsel had told the court in the June 2005 hearing, that if you have a leak in the seal with a positive pressure SCBA, the clean air will flow out rather than contaminated air flowing in. And so that's what the district court was relying on when it found in 2005 that the department had taken the issue out of the case. The department never appealed that ruling, and it never contested.
Preliminary injunction, right?
It did continue the preliminary injunction. That's correct.
Right.
But quite apart from what the district court said, don't we? This is an appeal of a grant of summary judgment, right?
That is correct.
So we have to look to see whether there's a genuine issue of material fact, correct, about the safety of the self-contained breathing apparatuses.
Well, we think, don't we? We submit, Your Honor, that there are two standards of review that are implicated here. The first is an abuse of discretion standard of review where the district court made a case management ruling. It made a case management decision
that
the issue
after the grant of summary judgment. Isn't the summary judgment determined ruling on appeal here?
It is the summary judgment ruling and the ruling and the permanent injunction.
Right.
Yes.
So the summary judgment ruling is here, and we review that de novo. Correct.
That is correct.
And don't
of
we
course.
Then, don't we? And what we normally do is we look at the record and the briefs, and we determine for ourselves whether there's a genuine issue of material fact. Correct. Isn't that independent, completely independent of the second question, which is the district court's refusal to reopen it later?
Well, we believe, Your Honor, that in this case, that both standards are implicated because you
separately,
had...
correct?
I'm sorry?
Separately implicated. In other words, why does the second decision, that is the district court's decision not to reopen it, affect the first question, namely
because
the grant of summary judgment? Why isn't the grant of summary judgment just a standard appeal of a summary judgment motion?
Well, the department was contending, Your Honor, that it disputed that it actually raised this issue not just in its motion for reconsideration. The department contends that in its summary judgment opposition,
I'm
sorry.
They raised it earlier, right?
Right, exactly. They say we raised it in our summary judgment opposition.
Don't we have to look to see whether that's right or wrong?
Well,
you might be right that they didn't, but don't we have to, isn't that the question we have to ask?
I think, Your Honor, that if they did not raise, if they say that they raised that issue, then you can look to the clear statement from the district court at the motion for reconsideration saying, no, you took this issue out of the case a long time ago. I said that.
Let me just try it this way. Suppose everything was exactly right except that they had made the statement that they took it off the table. The district court said what he said. But if we looked at the record and we saw very, very clearly that, in fact, in their opposition to motion for summary judgment, they pointed to evidence, admissible evidence, that these devices were not safe. Now, wouldn't we, under those facts, have to reverse?
If the department, hypothetically speaking, had raised the issue of SCBA safety, had tried to put it back in the case at the summary judgment stage, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right then. In their opposition for motion for summary judgment, they say they are unsafe, and they cite an affidavit from a qualified expert saying they're unsafe and explaining why. Now, wouldn't we would have to reverse that, correct? The grant of summary judgment for the district.
Well,
apart from what the counsel said or what the district court said later.
Well, we submit, Your Honor, that the district court made a case management decision that you can't take an issue out of the case and not litigate it from 2001 on, and then in 2007 put the issue back in the case after the parties have gone forward with discovery on issues other than SCBA safety.
Are you making this argument because you don't think you can win on the proposition that setting aside these concessions, there is no contested issue of material fact on the safety question?
Not at all, Your Honor. We believe we can win on de novo review as well because the department failed to come forward with evidence, as was its burden under RFRA, that a bearded firefighter cannot safely wear a self-contained breathing apparatus. Quite the contrary, the department's own safety officer testified at the August 1st, 2005 hearing that the way an SCBA works, if you have a slight breach in the face piece seal because of facial hair, clean air flows out of the face piece rather than contaminants flowing in.
Can we talk about the actual documents before the judge?
Sure.
Motion for summary judgment. We have the third McKay declaration, and there's this sentence: when an acceptable seal is maintained, no inward flow of air comes through the regulator during exhalation or during the pause between breaths. Now, that seems to carry a negative implication that when an acceptable seal is not maintained, the reverse is true. It's not absolutely necessary that the inverse would be true.
Right.
But it's certainly a natural inference, right?
Well, the answer to that is an inference to what, Your Honor? Because he's talking about not contaminated air flowing in from the atmosphere.
What's this inward flow of air?
He's talking about air, clean air coming from the tank through the regulator into the facepiece. And that's why he says this feature of the pressure demand regulator helps conserve the supply of air carried on the wearer's back. Because what he's talking about is if you have a breach, the positive pressure, because an SCBA continuously maintains positive pressure regardless of whether it continuously lets in air. And if you have a breach in the seal, air is going to flow out, and so more air from the tank is going to have to keep flowing in. So McKay's...
That follows from the following sentence, to the sentence Judge Williams read. So is it your position that if we scour again the McKay third deposition, we will simply find nothing other than a reference to a break in the seal and more air coming from the canister as distinct from air coming from what I'll describe as the outside environment?
That's correct. McKay, if you read the Thurman-McKay declaration, you won't find anything saying that if you have a breach in a seal while a firefighter is wearing an SCBA, the contaminated air will flow inside the facepiece. He was echoing the testimony of the department safety officer at the...
Flint?
That is Captain Flint, right.
Let's look at Flint.
Okay.
On page 63 of the joint appendix, lines 3 to 7. So if there were any contaminants or any actual leakage because of either facial structure or because of facial hair that had gotten caught, or maybe a piece of clothing, or maybe the strap was loose, that the air would rush in, would rush from the outside in.
And the next sentence, of course, Your Honor, he says...
He turns to a separate issue in the next sentence.
I'm not sure that that's a separate issue. He says the problem with that is it results in a brief service life. So I don't know that he's turning to a separate issue when he says the problem with that.
Okay,
he's talking
line 16. So reduced service life is an issue as well. As well as what? It can't be reduced service life twice, right? It's something in addition to reduced service life.
I think if I had time to scour the whole transcript right now, I could maybe figure out what he was talking about, if he was talking about anything other than that. But I think if you look at Captain Flint's testimony on page 61 of the appendix at lines 17 through 22, it says, well, the breathing apparatus that we use, and I've got a sample here, and counsel says, why don't we take a look at that? And Captain Flint says, creates a positive pressure within the facepiece so that if there were to be a leak, then the air would leak out to the side instead of the toxic atmosphere being drawn in. So I think when you look at that testimony and then look at the testimony on page 63 of the appendix, the much more natural inference to draw is that he wasn't contradicting himself a few pages later in the transcript, that he was talking, first of all, about what happens if you have a leak, that the clean air rushes out instead of contaminated air coming in. And then on 63, he's talking about reduced service life. Two things about reduced service life, of course. The department's counsel had told the court and the parties at the June 2005 hearing that that's not what was motivating its beard policy. And second, the undisputed testimony, as recognized by the district court from Chief Santora in his 2001 declaration and at the 2005 hearing, was that a variety of factors influence how quickly a firefighter exhaust the breathing canister. It's the firefighter's height, weight, lung capacity, the amount of physical exertion, what kind of shape he's in, what kind of health he or she is in. Those things all influence the exhaustion of a breathing tank. A beard, on the other hand, only exhausts it if there's a breach in the seal. And if you look at page 77 of the appendix, footnote 4, you can see that the district court recognized that, having heard the evidence from both sides. And again, the issue, as we understood it, was not in the case. The next point I'd like to discuss is that even if the, let me back up. The next point I'd like to discuss is that the department did not, in fact, try to take back its concession in January of 2007. There was no mention of the words self-contained breathing apparatuses or the initials SCBA anywhere in the department's summary judgment opposition. And if you look again at the department's response to the plaintiff's statement of undisputed material facts, paragraph 5, they never say it would be dangerous for a firefighter to have a beard with an SCBA. They don't dispute the key factual issue.
I'm sorry. What do you do with the passage at page 111 of the joint appendix?
That's right. So if you look at the statement in on page 110, the undisputed fact that the plaintiffs put forward, they explained how an SCBA works. Admittedly, the plaintiff's statement was incorrect in that it said it supplies a continuous flow of air. It should have said it continuously maintains positive pressure. But then the plaintiffs say, it is therefore not dangerous for a firefighter to work in a hazardous environment using an SCBA. The department, in responding to this statement of undisputed material fact on page 111, never says it is dangerous for a firefighter.
So what do you think an inward flow of air would mean?
An inward flow of air is talking about exhausting the air tank on the wearer's back.
If that's the correct reading of it, yes. But in which case, it's rather puzzling why the district would make any fuss about it. I mean, that seems to be completely, you've reduced what looks like a dispute to quibbling.
Well, that's right. We think it is quibbling. They were talking about how an SCBA works, and they were disputing technical aspects of the statement of undisputed fact 5, but they were not disputing the key fact about SCBA use for bearded firefighters, which is that it's not dangerous. And that undisputed fact was supported by Captain Flint's testimony. It was supported by Chief Santora's declaration from 2001.
Was the OSHA regulation adopted in a regular notice and comment rulemaking?
I believe that it was, Your Honor, and I believe it took a substantial period of time for the regulation to become a final rule. I think that the version that the department's referring to became a final rule in 1998.
So there's some record of what OSHA said by way of explanation.
The OSHA cited a lot of the same studies that Dr. McKay cited, and these are studies from 1973 and 1980, from well before the events in this case. The department, of course, was permitting firefighters to have facial hair the entire time.
Do the OSHA standards you're talking about, do they focus on these self-contained breathing apparatuses?
They talk about, I believe, tight-fitting respirators.
Right, but aren't there tight-fitting masks for all three devices?
That is correct.
So you don't know whether the OSHA regs have a, when they're talking about that the masks must be tight, whether they're focusing at all on these particular types of devices.
I believe there's discussion of all the different types of masks.
They certainly have no exception for it.
That is correct, Your Honor. But again, if one looks to the OSHA regulation, it would still need to survive strict scrutiny under RFRA. RFRA mandates.
Yes, but if we affirm here, then at least putting aside errors by counsel, it would be a precedent establishing the proposition that there was no justification for that provision of the OSHA regulations, right?
I mean, I guess it would be a precedent, but a precedent relying upon the testimony of the department safety officer and the declaration of the former chief of safety and deputy chief of the New York City Fire Department.
I mean, I suppose the answer is it would be a declaration on the record in this case, correct?
I'm sorry?
It would be a determination based on the record in this case.
That's right, Your Honor.
Nothing else.
Exactly.
Right.
And if there are no further questions, we would ask that the district court's decision be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Counsel for appellant.
Thank you. Initially, Your Honor, I would submit that the a statement in McKay's declaration concerning an inward flow of air does not refer to air coming from the air canister.
Which declaration are you talking about?
The third third one in paragraph 22. Excuse me, Your Honor. Uh-huh. As I said, the reference here are to two issues. The demand regulator conserves air because it only allows air to be supplied when you inhale. But the second issue that he's referring to here is not simply drawing more quickly the air from the canister. That's not the inward flow of air that he's talking about. He is talking about inward flow of air from the outside that would be drawn in if there was a leak in the seal caused by facial hair at the point where the mask touches the face. Moreover, in a summary judgment standard, the defendant is...
Can I just ask you, how is that possible as long as there's air in the canister?
Because you overbreathe it. There is no air in the canister. I mean, there is no air in the mask that's supplied by the canister. That's the whole thing about a demand regulator. You put it on and you inhale and you get a shot of air. And at moderate to heavy exertion, you can overbreathe the mask. You can pull in more air than was supplied. And if there's a leak and you're pulling in more air than supply, you're going to be pulling outside air in. And this is exactly the point in one of the documents that were submitted to the court at the...
If it's so clear, why didn't the memorandum in opposition to summary judgment explain that and use the word self-contained breathing apparatus?
Well, I think there was one of the pieces of evidence I neglected to identify for you, Judge Tatel, was the article in the International Fire Chief by Mr. Held. It's a 1980 article. It was submitted after the August 1, 2005 hearing. And it clearly identifies, and there's a section on the problems with positive pressure scubas, one of which is this exact problem, that it can be overbreathed, and you can suck in or pull in outside contaminated air. And it's clearly set forth. It's in the appendix as well. And I think given the defendant the reasonable inference from this evidence, it does clearly identify a dispute as to the safety of these types of respiratory masks. The point you had asked in terms of the face masks, there's only one face mask that's used. It is attached to various different equipment. But if there is and all of the Dr. McKay's declarations indicate without limitation that if there is an interruption in the seal caused by facial hair at this point, it does create a safety problem regardless of what it's connected to. In closing, Your Honor, I would stress that there is a compelling interest in maximizing public safety here, the safety of the firefighters, their teammates, and the general public they serve to protect, and that the department can't maximize public safety by moving firefighters and paramedics to administrative duties, by excusing them from duty, or sending them into a dangerous environment with less efficient equipment. The policy here is the least restrictive method to maximize public safety. And there are disputed issues of fact, important personal and public safety issues that should be decided on the merits of a fuller record and not on the basis of a concession that was not made.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Case under advisement.